This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
Whatever your tastes, you'll find it on
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Something for everybody.
Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek, your program for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. Andrew the Apprentice here, along with James Finlay. And tomorrow, right around the world, is the launch of a much anticipated movie.
Yeah. 50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey.
My auntie and her daughter were in a car recently.
Right.
And her daughter's like 13 or something. And she said, oh, I like that Ellie Goulding song, Mum. And she's like, oh, right. She's like, yeah, it's from 50 Shades of Grey. Can we go and see the movie? And she's like, no, I don't think we'll be seeing that. Oh, why not, Mum? You've got to take me. And she's like, no, I don't think it's appropriate. We'll just buy you the soundtrack.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Good call, Mum.
Good call, Mum. Probably shouldn't take your 13, 14-year-old daughter to see 50 Shades.
That's right, because 50 Shades, look, I haven't read the book. You've read a little bit of the book.
Yeah. Apparently the film is quite toned down from the book.
Yeah.
And considering how toned down the book is from perhaps real life or what we're about to talk about, it might be quite vanilla.
Exactly. So it does have the theme of BDSM. And to talk about the real life experience of BDSM, we have in the studio with us BJ.
Hello.
And also Riverkeeper. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So BJ, let's start with you. How do you personally define BDSM?
So if we look at the abbreviation of BDSM, the B stands for bondage. So that can be physical bondage, like it could be tying somebody's wrists up with rope. It could be psychological. So it could be physical and psychological. So it could be psychological, as in like someone could be told to stand in a corner of a room and not be able to move, or they might not be able to touch themselves in any sexual manner. So then there's this kind of psychological imposed bondage put onto them. So then the D in BDSM stands for discipline. This can be physical. Again, somebody might be whipped or caned or cropped or spanked or anything like that. And also it can be psychological, like we might be trying to train a certain routine into somebody or a certain behavior, and like on a regular basis. Then there's the S in BDSM, and that stands for sadism. So it's bondage discipline, sadomasochism. So sadism comes from Marquis de Sade, who was actually a French writer who wrote French erotic fiction. And he was probably around about 1700s, am I correct? Yep. Then the M in SM comes from Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, who was an Austrian writer. What I love about Leopold von Sacher-Masoch was that he was a poor writer, and he actually went to these incredible efforts to live out his fantasies in real life. And you know, in the story, if you read his most famous novel, which was Venus in Furs, where masochism was originally kind of termed from, and which actually put him on the map. It was kind of the characters lived a very luxurious and rich lifestyle, and so he tried to replicate this, but it didn't quite work out in reality for him.
Yeah, right.
Now there's actually a lot of debate where some people would say that if you're into the consensual act of receiving pain or pleasure, and the pleasure from this, that we're all masochists, because he was actually the first one to actually write about the consensual act.
Okay.
Whereas Marquis de Sade, what he wrote about wasn't very consensual.
Right.
And he also, Leopold von Sacher-Masoch also, what I love about him, he didn't just focus on the physical aspects of masochism. He also focused on the psychological aspects, like being in love with somebody and being treated poorly by them, the pleasure that's derived from that, right. Like having a broken heart and being treated almost like, I guess some of the situations that happened in the book would be what would be conceived to be these days as the term cuckold kind of fantasies. So which was kind of being in love with somebody and not having that love returned, but mm-hmm. that person playing you along and being sexually aroused by that.
Right.
So yeah, he wrote about, and in the book there was only one circumstance which I can remember where he actually was physically whipped or punished, and most of it was all psychological. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would highly recommend if anyone is interested in reading any SM novels, that they've got to really check out Venus and Furs. It's incredible.
And Riverkeeper for you, and BJ's gone through and given us the definition, I guess. And for you, what does it mean for you as individually?
Well, for me, I take some of the other elements of it. So BDSM have got the traditional definitions that BJ has gone through.
Yeah.
But also the DS in the middle can, in some people's parlance, stand for domination and submission.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in DS relationships with my two slaves,
mm-hmm.
My boot boy and my boot slave. And so for me, that means that I live my daily life in relationships, mm-hmm. and really enjoy that, and they enjoy that in terms of living what BJ spoke about,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the DS relationship.
What's the difference between your boot boy and your boot slave? Do they have different chores?
They do. They have also a different headspace.
Mm-hmm.
One of the important aspects about BDSM is that we can talk about labels and definitions, but mm-hmm. people sometimes will vary about that. What it's about fundamentally in terms of kink, play, is that I'm me, you're you, he is he. We each have our own headspace and what we have inside us and what we enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And we then create together something together and us, like any relationship out in the vanilla world as well.
Yeah, right.
And so the boot boy and I, who I've owned for just over 18 months,
mm-hmm.
he's now moving into more nurturing play, such as pup play and pet play,
mm-hmm.
whereas the boot slave very much enjoys protocol and service orientation in terms of keeping an amazing home.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think you've gone into a little bit there, but there are a lot of myths around BDSM. And I think, one thing that you brought up there is like everyone kind of has their own relationship with it and what they want out of it.
That's a very good point, what Riverkeeper was saying.
Yeah.
That, you know, a lot of people try and follow rules of what they straight away think it should be about, you know, but we're very complex people as humans, you know,
and each
relationship can be very complex and we're very different. So if you try and follow your relationship just on a story that you read or watch what you know,
like Cinderella or something,
it's not always going to work out.
Yeah. Because I've definitely been in a situation where, you know, you start off having a conversation about, okay, well, I want these, or I want to be in this kind of situation. Yeah. I want you to do these things, and they'll be like, okay, well, I'm interested in this. But then if you don't really explore exactly the little details about, it was like, well, no, it was like, no, stop! We'll stop doing that. Like that's not doing anything. Anything like this.
And it's what you say, James.
Yeah.
That you you've got what you want to do, and then what he wants to do, and you've got to sort of negotiate.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
Like in any sort of relationship, and
mm-hmm.
and there might be some things that you want to do that he's not that interested in.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you've got to sort of work stuff out. And the other aspect of what you're saying is the physical stuff of what you do,
mm.
in terms of then triggering the mental.
Mm-hmm.
BJ was talking about the emotional and the mental side of things. Mm. One of the things as a gay man that we often don't quite get into is the fact that if we're doing things such as penetrative sex, then that will create a whole range of beautiful feelings in us, including potentially orgasm.
Yeah.
But in fact, what it's doing is triggering our headspace and our feelings in our head.
How difficult is it to find a compatible partner? River Cover, do you want to go first?
It can be quite difficult, although
just
in the
like
modern
the real world.
Like the real world. Yeah.
I mean, how do any relationship start?
Yeah.
In the kink community, we have various options, and obviously online, it's very easy to connect with people that might have a particular fetish or kink in BDSM that you want to explore. So a very common gay male site is Recon. The major worldwide site is called FetLife, and that's pansexual and covers both men and women of all different genders and sexualities.
It's like a Facebook for kink, really, isn't it?
It is.
FetLife?
Yeah. And so you can connect that way, and you can also connect at events. Where you go along to social events that are called munches.
Munches.
Yeah, we have our jargon like any community.
Is that like a lunch but you're doing something else?
No. It sounds it, but it's just a social occasion where you wouldn't dress in anything, particularly
kink. You're just in your civvies.
You're just in your civvies and your vanilla clothes rather than fetwear. And you go out for lunch or dinner and you might do an on a geographical basis or if you've got a particular interest. So that's just a jargon. Then there are play parties as well. There's a few on each month in Melbourne, and they're easily found on either Facebook or FetLife.
Mm. We'll get some more details on those before the end of the program.
Yep.
In the studio with us, we have BJ and Riverkeeper. We're talking BDSM in the anticipation of the release of a movie, which is going to get a lot of people talking.
Exactly.
If not already.
And we've got BJ and Riverkeeper in the studio.
If you have any questions, shoot them in 0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au.
That's right.
And but before we keep going, for anyone who's listening and might be thinking, oh, I've always, or they've maybe read the book or heard about the movie and thought, it might be something that I want to get involved in, what are some tips for some people who are just starting out?
I think that there's actually a book which is almost considered to be the Bible of BDSM these days, which is called Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns. Originally, lovely. Before that, there was a book called SM 101. And a lot of people find that book to be a bit of a dry read, if that makes sense.
Right, okay. Need some lube for that one.
Yeah, exactly. But Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns kind of touches on so many different topics and different types of play that you might want to get into. It covers a fair amount on safety, but doesn't go overboard on it so much. So it gives you the right information so you can kind of consider what you might be into. You might be into rope bondage, or you might be into flogging, and then after that, you can go on and further read about or learn about each different type of play that you might be into.
Mm-hmm. Riverkeeper, do you have a particular type of play that you focus in, or is there a wide range?
For me, I get a lot of satisfaction about exploring new things and deepening existing sorts of play. So I enjoy impact play, such as spanking, and flogging and paddling, but I do it in a way that triggers joy and pleasure as well as the sensation of pain, and that combination creates a particular headspace where the submissive feels better and gets into a thing called subspace.
Is it a case that do you need a dedicated play space to do all this, or can you just walk around in your bedroom?
Play wherever.
But ideally, yes. If anyone's got a castle that they want to hide or something, maybe that would be really cool. But ideally, although, like, I don't know. I think one important thing is to make sure that you clean your house before you play, unless you want to do like a ghetto scene or something.
Actually, that's a really good point, the word clean. We need to be careful about safety.
We need to make sure our environment's clean, of course. Yeah. Be aware of it, you know.
In what ways? That you might fall on something? Or?
Well, or something might fall on you as well. Yeah. Like, you know, you might tie somebody's wrists up to a beam in your house that you might think is safe, but once they try and grab onto it, put a lot of weight on it, your roof comes down or part of your ceiling. So you've got to be aware of those things. There could be poor lighting as well in the room.
And the other clear thing that BJ was talking about before in terms of the emotional play. Mm-hmm. So myself as a dominant, if I have a slave or a submissive that I'm playing with, then what will happen is that during the play, they will, because they're trusting me, they're having me in control of their bodies, mm-hmm. That means that their headspace is an incredibly beautiful, intense headspace, and I'm responsible both for myself and for them to ensure that it's safe. Mm. And so there are various ways to think about that, both before play in terms of negotiating and saying, I like that or I don't like that. So you should never negotiate during play.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, when gay men want to fuck and then they go, well, I don't want to, you know, and then suddenly no condom use, because in the middle of passion that might occur. So in the same with BDSM, negotiation has to occur prior in whatever way, whether it's online or in other ways.
And I guess if that is discussed during play, it could completely screw with the mindset of both of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, and the submissive might go, well, I want to please you and I want to have you satisfied, so therefore, I'll just keep going and place themselves in harm,
which
is very different from hurt, because pain play and about consensual hurt is that's good, but harm is never good.
Mm. It's also it's a responsibility of the submissive to be transparent about their own limitations, mm-hmm. as well. Like, you get some people that will say, I'm into whatever you want me to do. I'll do it. I'm into everything. And it's like, well, if the master says, well, I'm actually into amputation play.
What kind of a list of people have to give these?
So you've got to be careful, and that is a responsibility of the submissive. It's a responsibility of the top to be very clear on the negotiation and what you negotiate.
Perhaps be the thing, like, list the things that they are into, mm-hmm. saying, well, I'm interested in these things. Is there anything there that you want to cross off, kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, we've all heard, of course, about safe words that you need to call, I don't know, cucumber or whatever it is. what's your position on safe words? How do you work out safe words? Or are safe words a myth, or is it
a thing?
You do need it, and like, I don't think it's something that you need to fall back on or have just in case of an emergency. Mm-hmm. It could even be, it's good to have safe words because, well, number one, it's kind of kills the scene if you're having to say, yeah, that's not bad, but like, we could go a little bit harder and having to talk in the middle of it and you're doing something, it kills the scene, doesn't it? So then we have like a secret coded safe word system, like the traffic light system, which is quite often used, which is, you know, green for some people might mm-hmm. be, can you please go harder or more of that?
Yeah.
Orange might be stop, that's not stop completely, but that's where it's at. Can we communicate somehow? That's also negotiated on what the traffic lights mean to you, and red means stop. That's the end of the scene. If you go past the safe word and someone calls red, then that goes beyond consent, and then it becomes really assault then, isn't it? If somebody's just clearly saying that they do not want to continue and you are inflicting pain or
doing some harm. And the other thing is what's called a safe call, which is different from a safe word, and that is that if you're going to meet someone for play, then you work out before, and you haven't met them before.
Yep.
and you're unsure in terms of a first session because you're trying to connect and you're going, yep, let's play, then you work out beforehand with a friend and say, hey, can you call me on my mobile at such and such a time, about an hour into the play? And a good dominant will always respect a safe call, whereas if they're not respectful of that sort of safety environment, then you should have some doubts about playing with that person.
Right, okay.
If there is some sort of gagging, for example, involved, how do you use safe words?
Oh, a safe signal.
A safe signal?
So yep. Clearly, if I'm bondaging in rope or leather or chain one of my boys, then what I would do is ensure that there is some way that there's a signal where they can move a leg, to lift a leg or whatever. Some people might, in fact, have an object held in the hand of the submissive.
So they can drop it.
And they can drop it to say, hey, stop. And that way they can enjoy the beauty of intense bondage and quite constrictive bondage or mummification and still have the element of safety.
And but as you're saying, it's communication is going to be obviously the key.
Oh my God, you need to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
This is really important, and it's got to be really open, honest, raw communication, so that you really understand each other, like in any relationship, really. But because you're going to be playing not just physically but emotionally, you really need to effectively communicate and be able to say things that you mightn't be that comfortable about. And good players in BDSM will understand that and ensure that they respect that you're saying, hey, that's not quite right, etc.
So why don't we just
fight? All day, every day at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9, Hide and Seek, your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Andrew and James, along with BJ and Riverkeeper, talking about BDSM. We were just talking about the importance of communication.
Yeah, that's right. And I imagine it would be something that, well, we've talked about the communicating before,
yeah,
beforehand, but also during.
Yes.
Going back to organizing, like when and where and how, can BDSM be spontaneous at times? I feel like there's a lot of prep that goes into it.
I think that if you prepare well, the scenes normally go better. Mm-hmm. But it also, than what Riverkeeper was discussing before about how relationships can be very different. Mm-hmm. When you're in a DS relationship, then things can be spontaneous, and that's really hot.
Yeah,
just having those spontaneous moments is good when it can put you straight into that subspace that Riverkeep was talking about. So it really depends on the relationship or what you've got going on, I guess, and individuals.
Do you think that BDSM's become more popular over the past few years?
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. What do you think has brought this on, in your opinions?
I think it's been the media is a big part of it. 50 Shades of Grey, of course. When the book came out, we started noticing that working at Eagle Lever, the clientele started to get a lot younger.
Right.
A lot more women are becoming involved as well. Mm-hmm. You go to the events now, and the numbers have increased to a lot of the BDSM events that are out. So it's definitely become more acceptable. It's no longer, I guess, a freak if you're into BDSM.
Yeah,
whereas
also
in the
taboo.
Past, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, is that because it's such a beautifully deep relationship and commitment, people really enjoy that. And when they've got other friends that go, hey, that's pretty awesome, they might look at exploring what might be real for themselves in their own identity.
Yeah, okay.
We talked about communication before and during. What about afterwards? I'm assuming that afterwards there's the need for the communications and debriefing.
Aftercare is what we term it.
Yep.
And so in aftercare is about ensuring that we come back to reality in terms of, the vanilla world in a sense. And so because you've had that quite intense experience, physical and emotional, you then need to come back to earth, feel safe, talk about it, review it, what went well, what didn't go so good, what could be better next time. And the connection is so deep and intense that at some point you're going to separate. And so particularly the submissive will feel, oh, I'm by myself again.
Mm.
So in a sense, they need to feel cared for by the dominant.
They need to know that it comes from a good place. I mean, that's really important. Like, you're doing in a lot of circumstances, you're doing something very physical and in some cases aggressive to somebody else, and they need to know afterwards that that came from a good place,
yeah.
And that it was about both having an experience together, both having an enjoyable experience. I think that the best way is to explain it is that a scene should really be like a going over or driving over a mountain. It should have its subtle beginnings and then have its increase and have its peak, and then it should have its slow descent where you bring people back to earth again.
And the same such as in sport, you know, if Arvi's away doing rugby, I believe, in a good rugby game, it can be quite physical and intense, and then afterwards you have a drink and you might have a drink with the other side and all of that and be mates again. So there's a bit of aftercare.
Mm. I'd imagine the transition phase at the end might be something that people have to get used to. You know, it might be quite a bizarre transition. I think
maybe if you knew, I could imagine maybe that could be.
Yeah, and it's individual as well.
Yeah.
So every person's different in terms of the sort of aftercare that will be needed for that person. Mm.
Now, we've had a message in on 0427 Joy 949. You can also do that, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. The question is asking, you were talking about subspaces, so can you just define that a little bit and also clarify, do you have to get to a subspace? Is that the ultimate goal?
As a sub, I guess.
Well, is orgasm the goal of sex? No, of course not. You can enjoy the experience, and you don't have to achieve subspace in order to succeed, in a sense. So enjoying the experience, reviewing it, and then over time, especially if you're playing with someone more regularly and developing that sort of dynamic, you'll then achieve subspace in the way that will be good for you. Subspace in terms of definition varies a little, but basically what it is because you're in such a deeply physical play, you're letting loose and you're letting control to another, it means that as that person uses you, your mind starts to feel really good and float or have other sorts of really good, amazing feelings. And so it's quite an intense emotional experience, like damn good sex has as well. If you're really in pumping and you connect well and you're really enjoying the physicality of sex, then that connection and intimacy can create amazing feelings. The physical creates the emotional.
BJ, I'm guessing you're nodding your head away, and that seems to be. I was going to ask a question, but I think we've really picked it up throughout the conversation that it's not just in the play scene. It's right after the play scene and continues that there's good chemistry develops up, particularly between partners
over years. Yeah, and that's what I love about BDSM. Not only do you get to explore areas that you wouldn't be able to explore in everyday life and live out fantasies in a safe environment as well, but as your relationship develops in a DS circumstantial kind of relationship, it changes and it becomes exciting in different ways, and you know, you kind of live it. Your life kind of becomes it, and that's really exciting.
If someone's in a relationship and they feel like, oh, this might be something that I've wanted to introduce for a while, how do you think people can go about in introducing it into their vanilla lifestyle?
It's pretty hard to just say, hey, let's just try a DS relationship. It's not like, hey, we get along really well. Let's do DS for a while. It really depends on if you're compatible. You know, you have to be compatible in that way. you know, and not everyone is compatible in that way. And it doesn't, it's not like we were talking about before with Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, the Austrian writer. Mm-hmm. He tried to live it out in real life and he had a lot of problems because of his circumstances. A lot of us work long hours, you know, work big weeks, and when you come home, sometimes you're not in the mood, or you might be very fatigued and tired, and you might not feel like dressing in your leathers, you know, or you might not feel like submitting because you're in such stressed headspace. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's not always easy to live this type of lifestyle.
There are alternatives in a sense. So it's always good to be honest in a relationship.
Yeah.
I have another slave that I use occasionally. He is in a long-term relationship, and his partner knows. And right. So I am
so he rents him out sometimes.
Sorry?
It's like he rents him out.
Oh, no.
Well, you rent him out.
This particular slave, I'm the master of the slave, mm-hmm. and his boyfriend and him, they're partners.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't have the partner relationship in terms of that. He gets his fun in terms of satisfaction of his BDSM mm-hmm. with me, mm-hmm. and there's no threat in terms of his partner. So that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We mentioned before briefly that in Melbourne there's heaps of stuff happening around the places. And FetLife, you mentioned, was a website that's got a lot of events on it, I believe.
Yeah, FetLife, FetLife, FetLife.com, Canadian-based site, worldwide. It's awesome. It lists basically all the events. We also have The Laird in terms of gay men on a Thursday night. It's pretty good in terms of a leather fetish night. But other than that, we're really lucky in Melbourne. We've got Chains, Provocation, Abode, a new one called Splinter. So there are four monthly or weekly events around, plus more than 20 munches each month, and then a range of good discussion support groups as well. Right now, interestingly, we have the International Master Slave title holders from America who are visiting this weekend.
Really?
And running a number of workshops, which are still open for people to participate in. Mm-hmm. And if you go on FetLife, you would find those and be able to book in.
And BJ, I mean, we've also got a lot of retailers, Eagle Leather being one, Manhouse and others, where people can go and also be face-to-face with people in that sort of environment and start to at least ask some questions.
Yeah. Well, we're both Shane and myself, as business owners, we've both been at Eagle Leather for a long period of time. We're always open to chatting with customers. If they want to learn more, we can point them in the right direction. We also run workshops and seminars as well. On top of that, we've actually been running workshops and seminars since around about 1994, I think it was, before it was cool.
Yeah. Trendsetters.
Now there is so many workshops and seminars, and I guess what they now call kind of skill shares, you know, it's just endless. And we're talking before, as Riverkeeper's talking about how many events there are, I can remember at one period there was like one event every month basically in the in kind of the pansexual community, and you'd wait for that time every month, but now there's almost like it's endless, you know, dedicated venues like there is a Abode, which is just a dedicated
venue. And it's really beautiful, as BJ says, the pansexual community, which is very welcoming of gay men such as myself. So we actually mix really well in the kink community in terms of gay, straight, men, women, etc.
Yeah.
It's coming together really well in Melbourne at the moment, which is good to see.
So the scene is quite it's mostly mixed, right?
It's mostly mixed, yes.
And where are there places that have more gay, or what's, is there something that's more gay oriented that's regular, or
well, we have every 3 months there's Code Black at the Laird.
Yep, yep.
We also have the occasional workshop at Club 80, mm-hmm. And there's a night called Legatio that BJ is involved in, and then there's a Thursday night at the Laird as well.
Right.
So Riverkeeper, let's start with you. If as we wrap things up, what's the one message you'd give people or couples who are heading along to 50 Shades on Valentine's Day?
See you guys there.
What's your message to somebody who's vanilla but particularly interested in exploring?
Do a lot of reading, research, talk to real people, so don't just believe what you see online. Mm-hmm. FetLife is great. There's also other resources such as Peter Masters. He has a really good blog and information online and books. So good research, go to Munches, meet people and talk about it before you start experimenting. I get appalled at people just go, oh, let's go and try a bit of rope, or let's go and, you know, spank, or etc. If you don't really understand it properly or research it, you can actually do harm. So it's a good idea to research. Don't believe the 50 Shades of Grey movie as real life. It's an interesting fantasy story that has some elements, but in fact does not portray the great bulk of BDSM experience.
I mean, example is the 50 Shades of Grey book. I think they use cable ties in one of the scenes, which can be quite dangerous, you know, as a form of restraint. But it's also kind of going back to the internet and getting information off the internet. You really have to be careful what information you get from the net. You know, that's why sometimes it's better to speak to someone in the know, and they can point out great books which are a good resource. Mm-hmm. Because they're now with the internet, you know, there's people can share their opinions and their experiences, but some of them, you know, and like really don't have that much experience, and all of a sudden they're becoming an expert overnight because they've been involved in the scene for a year.
And we've got some really good support groups where you can just, and very welcoming of new people. So there's Masters and Slaves Together, Power Exchange and Leather Spirit, and each of the three have monthly meetings, and they're always welcoming of new people.
Wonderful.
And BJ, the book you mentioned before, Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns.
Yeah. What a cool title, huh?
Yeah, it is a very good title.
Awesome. I love it.
BJ and Riverkeeper, thank you so much for coming this evening. And helping us to learn more about the BDSM community.
Excellent. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au. Hide and Seek is presented by Andrew the Apprentice, James Findlay, and Avi Miller. Post-production by David Cheshire.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.